You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way, because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
Hey.
This is the movie show.
On your favorite ORSPS.
Active FM.
And my name is Ryan.
My name is Sash.
And we have started the show normal for once in a long time. Right. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you want to go and look at our previous shows. You might find a movie there that is extremely interesting or that you wanted to watch or have watched and you want to find out facts on it. That's what we do here. Right, Sash?
Right.
Yes.
Yes, moving right along. So we are going to be discussing actually one of the most iconic films in film history. Legit. Mm. Like, this film, I cannot believe it took us this long to watch. Well, I suppose it makes sense. It's not like, honestly, this film is not everyone's cup of tea. Like, it really is not. Like, you'll either like it. I don't know if you'll love it. I don't know. Or you'll hate it. There's, like, no in-between.
Mm. So, I loved the way that Quentin Tarantino directed.
Mm.
The lines, the conversation.
Can I say, Quentin Tarantino, I think, is the greatest dialogue writer of all time.
He's weird.
The dialogue that he writes in his films, it's unlike any other dialogue. Like, literally, he needs to win an award, a separate award, a dialogue award. Like, they need to just create that. It's not script writing. He's a brilliant script writer. But his dialogue, do you understand what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
One thing I've noticed about Quentin Tarantino's scenes is he has long scenes. He actually breaks film rules, because what they tell you, if you read any script writing book out there, they'll tell you, make sure that your conversations are quick and concise. They mustn't drag. They mustn't be long. You're going to lose your audience. No one likes a long talking scene. Mm. They want action. They want it to, like, literally, if you read any script writing book, I literally remember reading that in a script writing book I did, and they'll tell you, make sure it doesn't drag on for long.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino does not follow that rule.
I don't want to know what goes on in that guy's head. It must be so, like,
I think I would.
Django!
Django!
Yeah, that one.
That was, yeah. That still could be possibly be my favorite line.
Yeah.
From, and then he kills him and says, it's Django.
Yeah.
Like, that setup, and you know how they set something up and then they conclude it a little bit later? Oh, that was so satisfying. I was just like, yeah. That was brilliant. But honestly, like, Quentin Tarantino will have this long scene. Long, stretched out scene.
And you're entertained
and
through the whole conversation.
And it's full of dialogue, yes. There's nothing. It's just two people. It's not even five people talking. It's two people talking.
Yeah.
And for like 5 minutes, these two people are talking. Mm. And you are completely entertained the whole time. You are completely in it the whole time. You're like, how did they even get? It's brilliant.
And I don't know if you noticed, the whole film, it's like a loop.
Yes.
Like the beginning and the end tie right back together again.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And the whole movie, like, what is the point of the film?
That's the thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I
there's a whole lot of events that have nothing to do. It's just like stuff that just happened, okay?
It's like life.
Yeah.
It's like watching a story about life. Yeah. I feel like that is also another Quentin Tarantino thing. Like, you have movies where they make sure that it works out in a certain way. Because obviously people, they don't want reality when they're watching a film. They kind of want, like, the good happy ending, or they want, like, do you understand what I'm saying?
But this film was so satisfying.
It was satisfying.
You're like, wow.
I don't know why I'm satisfied, like, but I'm satisfied.
That is so good, because the end scene, I thought it was going to be another Reservoir Dogs again. I'm like, oh no, please no.
Where everyone dies.
Please no. But then I noticed the one guy, nobody's pointing a gun at him, and then I was just like,
yeah.
I was like, okay, wait, at least he'll be fine. Oh, wait, but then in the other thing never mind.
Okay, can we just say we are spoiling right now? We are not keeping quiet.
Well, it's such an old film. And besides, like, okay, just the only thing that I can say about this film is the language.
Well, the language is...
And to be honest with you, for me, I would put this film at the top of my list if it wasn't for
the language.
So I wouldn't recommend anybody to watch this film.
So just to give you an idea, the F word is used 265 times.
And there
in
was
this
a,
film, in 2 hours.
There was a profanity per minute count.
Was it?
Yeah.
What?
Now, the only reason why a Reservoir Dogs still topped this one.
Oh, no, Reservoir Dogs was hectic.
Was
shorter.
Because it was shorter, yeah. So there were more profanity words per minute. Minute.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I could watch this movie.
Hasn't Quentin gotten better with that, or is it? Look, Quentin speaks like that. I think that's also one of the reasons. Is if you listen, I mean, if you listen to an interview with him, the chances are, somewhere along the line, there's going to be a beep. So that's. I think.
If anybody out there is going to make the software where you just run the import, select your file.
Select which swear words you don't want.
Just
pick that
just
one.
Automatic, you know, because you don't know what's
no,
there.
No, but you know, like in some countries, some words
age
are like
restriction. Age, that'll be cool. Anyway, and then you export, select the destination. If everybody's gonna do that, and then you just let it run, and it runs very quickly. Available for Macintosh only because you know it really needs the slick and smoothness. But anyway, because you want to watch the film, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to wait forever.
No, you don't want to wait forever.
This is not about my software, this show. But if anybody makes that software out there, this is a good film
to do it on.
To test it on. If it passes this one.
You're
and
good.
By the way, I would happy to test your software out. You know, you just Google Drive, just send me the link for your Google Drive. So if I ever get an email with someone saying, here it is, and then there's a Google
ta-da!
Drive. And I know if it's Google Drive, right, because it says googledrive.com. I would happy to watch that whole film again, and I'll be like at 3 minutes 41. The F word, the guy in the background swore.
The guy in the background.
You might want to just tweak your threshold there.
It was like the, oh, that's one thing I wanted to look for. I didn't hear the Wilhelm scream in this
and
one.
And the bleeps were a bit too long. You need to just shorten the bleeps. Because, you know, when they swear, they say the F word, it's quite quick. You know. So just.
Or they could just silence it.
Guys are getting ideas
they
out
could,
there.
No, don't beep it.
Okay,
just
no
silence
bleeps.
It.
Or you can choose bleep or silence.
Okay, that would be cool. Make
yeah,
because
it might be. Or you can replace it with another word.
Ah!
You can even record yourself.
No.
Anyway, moving on. So I would have loved to show this film to, you know, a lot of people. But I'm just like, no, don't. I'm not going to show this film to nobody.
Okay. I personally, with this film, I loved the first and third act of the film. Mm. The second act,
what was the point of that act?
Okay, so basically what this film is, so just to give you a brief description, this film is actually four interconnected short stories told together. That's actually what there's four, yeah. So there's the honey and pumpkin story,
yeah,
which it starts with.
Comes back.
Yes, honey and it was pumpkin and honey bunny, yes.
Yeah.
So the two people that basically rob the restaurant, and they have a very short story, but it's their storyline splits up.
Which we have the return of Tim Roth again.
Yes.
I was like, Tim Roth.
And he was
English
his English accent.
I was like,
it was cool, yeah. Mm. And also, I don't know if you remember when we did Bad Guys, the start of Bad Guys paid homage
so
to that
where
scene.
This comes from.
I was like, it's so cool. Yeah. This is the scene. Then there's the story where Vince is the protagonist, who's John Travolta. Can I just say, I loved John Travolta. He was my favorite character in the whole film. Samuel L. Jackson was also cool, and I loved that duo. It was like one of the best film duos. But I loved his character. However, do you know that he was actually considered as the antagonist of the film?
Really?
But we'll get back into that a little later. So you have his storyline. Then you have the storyline where Jules is the main character, where like he has that whole, that was a miracle. I feel like I need to turn my life around. We have had divine intervention.
For me, he took the end.
Yeah, no.
So at the end, it was like, because he really, like what he did. I was just
it was
like.
Proper, yeah. It was nice. And then you have the whole Marcellus and Butch, which was, I didn't enjoy that short story personally. That was the short story
that was just very disturbing.
Marcellus, that was Bruce and Willis Butch. And the main boss guy. You know, so his storyline is basically he was supposed to throw a boxing game.
Yeah.
He was bribed, and instead of throwing the game, he ended up killing his opponent and winning, and then wants to run off. But then his father, or there was a golden watch that was passed down from generation to generation, and
across World War. And everything.
Yeah, everything. And that watch was, his girlfriend forgot to take it. And so he goes back to the apartment, and he actually runs into John Travolta there and then shoots him. I was just like, why?
Let's
I
think
liked
about
him.
This. Let's think about this. In this movie with the whole loop, that section must have happened outside of the loop, if you think about it.
No, that actually happened at the end. So the movie actually, if you look at the movie in chronological order,
so after the end,
the movie ends with Bruce Willis and his girlfriend driving away on the motorcycle, the chopper. And that's why the movie starts. I don't know if you heard, but in the beginning of the movie, when they bring up the definition of Pulp Fiction, the movie starts with a motorbike sound effect.
I didn't even pick that up.
That's paying crazy. Homage to that. Yeah. So it actually starts. Where does it start? It starts when John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson go to get the briefcase. No, I'm lying. The chronological correct order starts with Butch as a young boy receiving the golden watch. You know, there's that scene.
Yeah.
So that's because he was young there. Then it would go to Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta getting the briefcase. Then it would obviously go to... How was them shooting that Marvin guy out of the blue? Like, I was just like, they just shot a guy by accident.
I was happy that they let him live. And then
that
happens.
By mistake, kid.
He's like, hey, man, did you...
Dude, you just shot him! It was an accident! It's like, okay.
That whole section there, I really enjoyed it.
And then when they go to Quentin Tarantino, obviously his name wasn't Quentin Tarantino, but they go to his house and then the wolf comes and that guy was also
so
in
cool.
Reservoir. Ah, oh, I love that moment.
I liked
that
him.
Section was
and
brilliant.
You know, if you think about it, the way that they did, like the way they spoke about the wolf.
Yes.
If you think about his plan, it's actually so logical. It's just that he was the most calmest guy.
Yeah, he was
that's
like,
why
okay.
He just walked on. He's like, he's
and the way
calm.
He left the coffee.
Yeah. Can I get some and he's sitting there.
My favorite part was after Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta changed into the t-shirt and shorts.
Yeah.
And they're both just standing there like.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I must say, I also loved when John Travolta took Mia out for supper. I loved that scene. That whole scene. That even everything. I loved that was also really cool. Mm. And I must be honest, I did enjoy the overdose. I know that sounds really weird, but just the way the overdose was done and the way they bring
and
her
again,
back.
An event that had it didn't really contribute. It was just...
Well, it contributed to John Travolta's storyline. So Vince's storyline,
I guess it gives you a bit more insight on the character. That's basically it.
Yeah. So the story actually ends. So Samuel... Where the film actually ends is obviously John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson leaving the restaurant. That's actually more mid-film, because after that what happens is Samuel L. Jackson goes off and becomes a better man, and then John Travolta obviously continues working for Marcellus, and then that's when Bruce Willis's character blows the whole bribe, and then they obviously go and wait for him at his house. Now, I saw a video where you know how when Bruce Willis he sees the gun on the counter, and then he hears the toilet being flushed, and then picks up the gun and shoots. I thought that was Vince's gun, but apparently that was actually Marcellus's gun. You know, the boss, the main guy. And the reason he wasn't at the apartment was he had gone to get donuts and coffee. And that's why Butch runs into him driving away.
Walking.
So it's kind of just like this freak coincidence type of like scenario playing out. And then obviously... For me, the when they get captured and then they that dude runs through that whole rape thing, just like I was just like okay, wow.
I think it's just because that's like the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah,
to
that was just like.
And then obviously Bruce Willis's character.
And I so did not see that coming.
Saved him out of that. Well, I went and I looked up the parental guide.
Oh, before.
Because the first thing I look for is if there's any nudity and stuff like that, so I know exactly. And then I saw that part and I was like, okay, coming up, right.
See, I didn't know. I literally went into this blind. Like,
is it?
I was just like, so for me personally, I didn't enjoy the second act. For me, the Bruce and Butch and Marcellus storyline was not my favorite. My favorite was the Vince and, what was Samuel L. Jackson's character? Jules.
No,
Vince and Jules. I loved that duo, and I loved Vince and Mia. I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah.
The opening sequence with Pumpkin and Honey Bunny was funny. I'll give it that. It was a cool concept, and I like how he tied up the beginning and the end with that scene where Samuel L. Jackson's like, are you still with me? You're fine, right? Keep calm. And she's just like standing there like freaking out. Yeah,
yeah, because he handles even the way that he handles.
He's just calm, yeah.
It's just like everything just fits so nicely, like a glove, you know.
So this is why they say. So do you know apparently that? So John Travolta, he's the antagonist in the film, and Butch is the protagonist in the film. And the reason they say that is, so John Travolta's character represents fear and Butch's character represents courage. So if you look at John Travolta's character, he was very inward. He only did stuff for himself. So even when he took Mia out, his constant thing was, I'm not going to mess around with my boss's wife. But not because he was trying to be morally right, just because he didn't want to die. Because obviously the movie starts with him and Samuel L. Jackson talking about the fact that Marcellus threw a guy out of a four-story building just because he gave his wife a foot massage.
That's
so for him, he was like, I don't want to get thrown out of a four-story building type of thing. So he kind of was only being morally sound with her because he was protecting himself. And then also when he saves her from the overdose, it wasn't because he wanted to save her necessarily. It was because...
He's going to die
if he tells his boss, your wife OD'd while I took her out for dinner. Sorry, she found my heroin and then, you know, being decided a cocaine addict, she's not used to that. So he was always inward and self-focused, etc., etc. Whereas with Butch, he almost like... So the watch obviously was given to him as a family like heirloom. Yeah, and it represents courage because they fought through World War One. I mean, his dad even died. His dad actually didn't make it out. His friend came and gave him the watch.
And that was his father's.
Yes.
So it's a generation.
But then also if you look at the end with Marcellus, he had the opportunity to run and leave Marcellus there. But instead he went and actually saved Marcellus. And then that's... So his courage...
That's just really good quick thinking.
Yeah.
Because he like stood there and he's about to like blow the guy. He's like, wait. And then he's like, oh, okay. And he's like, now what?
Yeah.
This is the guy, you know?
Yeah, so...
And he's like, are you okay? No, he said, what now?
Yes,
right?
What now?
I tell you, what now? No. It's like, okay, no.
What now?
What's up with that? No, why?
Basically, we're not enemies, but we're not friends.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see you again. And he's like, okay, I'll take that one.
Apparently, so there's obviously also the whole conspiracy of what was in the box, the briefcase. And some people say it was Marcellus's soul. And that's why he had the cuts. But this is just a fan theory. I don't think this is the real thing. But that's why he had the plaster on the back of his head.
Yeah.
But then I read somewhere else that the plaster was there because when he shaved off his hair, he cut himself. And so, but I love that shot, that beginning shot of Bruce Willis. Like the one shot for like a good 2 minutes, and all you're seeing is the back of this dude's head with a big plaster,
and, talking.
And Bruce Willis in like the foreground, and you're just like background, and you're just like. Is he insane? He's actually just insane.
I knew it was just one of his weird things that he does. Because the only time when you really see Marcellus's face is when Butch, right? Butch, the boxer, right?
Yes.
When them two come together.
Together, yeah.
And you know it's him. It's crazy. You never see his face, but you recognize
the
outfit.
You see him as well once with his wife, Mia. Oh, when he's on the phone with Samuel L. Jackson. But that was after. That was after that happened.
Yeah.
You know when he's like, we shot someone, now the car's full of blood and all of that.
Sending in the wolf. Oh, thank you. Oh, cool.
You the wolf.
Yeah. But I agree with you. What's his name?
John Travolta. He was my favorite character.
He was just so, like, he's just got this really, like, chill dude.
No, but do you know that his character is actually a heroin addict?
Really?
That's why he came across like that.
Sure.
And apparently, so John Travolta had never been on heroin, so he didn't know what it felt like. But apparently Quentin Tarantino knew someone who was a recovering heroin addict, and so he got him and John Travolta in contact. And he said to John Travolta, the best way don't do this, guys, what I'm about to say, don't do it, but the best way to almost recreate how it feels to be or to be on a heroin high is to basically get like super super wasted on tequila and then to lie in a hot bath or hot pool. So that's literally John Travolta and his wife both got like, they literally lined up tequila like all over this hot, you know those hot pools, what is it called? A jacuzzi basically.
Jacuzzi.
And then they got in the jacuzzi and just got like really wasted on tequila.
And then they laid there.
And they laid there. And that's how he,
he
prepared for the role.
He does that like thing where you're changing, but you're like fading between shots of him in the car and he's just like driving.
I'm like, dude, you're taking your boss's wife out and you're high.
And then like the close up shot of the syringe with the blood, and so yeah, the way that was cut
for me,
was.
I think one of my favorite moments is when he stabs Uma Thurman. Last week I couldn't remember the chick's name. Her name is Uma. Uma is still the weirdest name. Uma Thurman is her name. She's married to Ethan Hawke. Her daughter's Maya Hawke, who's Robin in Stranger Things, just in case you're wondering.
Is that the chick? Is that...
That's the chick, the one that OD'd.
Oh, her.
Yeah. She's still... She comes back. Quentin uses her.
And then he, like, drops her off. The way she
and
looks.
Then she sells the joke. Which, with the old tomato joke.
Yeah. Ketchup.
You know that pilot episode that she explains that she's in?
Yeah.
Apparently that comes back in Kill Bill. Like
no
that, yeah, that apparently wait, comes back in... I haven't watched Kill Bill,
that
so... But now get crazy. This. So this movie was 2 hours and 45 minutes. So almost 3 hours. This is Quentin Tarantino's second film. Reservoir Dogs was only 1 hour and 39 minutes. So this one's basically almost double the amount of runtime that Reservoir Dogs was. But get this. The budget for Reservoir Dogs is $1.2 million. The budget for this was only $8.5 million. Right? And $5 million of that went to the actors, their salary, because also Bruce Willis, when they added Bruce Willis on, that upped the cost of the film quite a bit.
Right, yeah.
But the box office for this film, so Reservoir Dogs made $2 million, right? So Quentin spent 1.2 and they brought in, it was actually closer to 3 million. It was 2.9, yeah, basically million. The budget for Pulp Fiction was 8.5 million. The box office for Pulp Fiction is $213.9 million. So Quentin Tarantino's first film was the brought in $2.9 million, right? So almost $3 million. His second film brought in $213 million. That's how you know you made it, man. You're like,
let's set him up for the rest of his career.
You're like super successful at this point. That's your second movie. I'm like,
yeah.
Your second movie brings in, yeah. So this movie cost $8 million to make. The initial budget was reported even lower until Bruce Willis was added to the cast, and $5 million went to pay the actors and actresses' salaries. The film was already profitable when its worldwide rights were sold for $11 million. Again, mainly on the strength of Willis's presence, and it went to make over $200 million at box office. So. Yes.
Did well.
And also, I think the reason why this film is so iconic, we're used to this nowadays, but this was the first time that the film's story wasn't presented in a linear structure. So a lot of people actually say that this film defies story structure. Story structure is Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. But it doesn't actually defy story structure, because if you look at each of the four different stories, they all have a setup, they all have a problem, they all have a climax, and they all have a resolution in all story. And the characters also have like story arcs and stuff like that. But the only difference is he hasn't told it in linear fashion. In other words, he didn't start at the beginning and finish at the end. Instead, he kind of started in the middle, then went back a bit, and then kind of jumped forward, and then came back.
Well, again, what was the problem?
In each story, there was a problem. So in Bruce Willis's one, he was trying to... Well, he'd taken a bribe, didn't follow through with the bribe, then was trying to get away, but then the gold watch was left behind.
And that was solved.
Then he went to get the gold watch, but then he bumped into his boss. Then him and his boss gets kidnapped by these gay rapist dudes. And then eventually they kill them and get away.
Saved his boss's life.
Vince's storyline is He is a heroin addict. He has to take his boss's wife out for dinner. Yeah. He does that, and then his partner leaves because he's had this miracle experience or spiritual experience, and then dies.
And he continues.
Jules' storyline is he's been a gangster. You know, he's used the Bible to justify killing people, and then he's saved by divine intervention, which he kind of is, and then he sees that as a sign from God that he needs to leave this lifestyle and walk away.
Walk the earth.
His character is actually the one that has the most character arc, because his character changes.
He leaves.
And then the last story is the Honey Bunny and Pumpkin. They crazy. They want to rob this restaurant.
And they just walk out there.
And then they just walk. They do get money, I suppose, from Samuel L. Jackson.
Do you think that was his pay for doing the job that he did? Out of the wallet. Because it was a lot of money that it was gave them.
I don't know if it was the briefcase one, because wouldn't they have gotten paid after delivering the briefcase?
That's also true.
And then there's the whole thing of the briefcase, because you never actually see what's in the briefcase.
You're still like, is that
gold? No. Is that Marcellus' soul? No. Yeah, so it's a weird film, but it's satisfying.
I think Quentin did the briefcase thing because it wasn't, I don't think he wanted to make it about.
No, it wasn't about the
briefcase. Yeah.
Well, there's a word in, I can't remember what it is, it's something with an M, but basically what that, you get it in different films where there's an object that does affect the storyline, but it doesn't matter what the object is. You could change the object. So the briefcase, honestly, the briefcase could have been anything. You could have actually changed the briefcase. The briefcase
could have
been...
We didn't really care about the briefcase.
Yeah, it was, so it's there and it does push the story forward.
Whenever it rocks up, he's just like, the briefcase. Yeah. You're not even wondering, where's the briefcase? Wait, does he still have the briefcase?
Exactly.
Are they going to make it? Are they going to be able to? You actually don't care.
So it's an object that could be anything. It does drive the story forward because obviously, like the reason
closest it comes is when you know that they're in the diner. He's about to get his wallet from him. Then he gets his wallet, and you're like, he wants the briefcase.
He wants
the briefcase. Oh no, he's not going to let the briefcase.
Yeah,
go.
That he can't let the briefcase
so
go.
That becomes like a cause for what's about to happen next. Yeah.
So the 1964 Malibu convertible, driven by Vincent Vega, who's John Travolta, belonged to Quentin Tarantino, right? And it was stolen during production of the film.
Yeah, you know who you are if you
No, but get this. So this film was brought out in 1994, right? So this is like a long time ago. Then in 2013... That's like over almost 10 years later. Yeah. No, over 10 years later. Yeah, like 20 years later, a police officer saw two kids stripping an older car. He arrested them, and while looking up the owner of the vehicle, he found the VIN. You know, each car has and he noticed that had been altered. It turned out that it was Tarantino's stolen car, and the owner had recently purchased it but had no idea it was stolen. So they actually found the car like 20 years later. How crazy is that? It's like, wow, shame.
It's never too late.
So his car literally got... Well, I suppose he did have like 200 million after that to, you know, like buy a new car. But still, man, don't steal people's cars. What's wrong with you?
It's the same car that the poor dude lost his head... Oh,
yes.
Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. With a white interior.
Yes. Then Uma Thurman originally turned down the role of Maya Wallace, but Tarantino was so desperate to have her as Maya, he ended up reading her the script over the phone, finally convincing her to take the role. And I thoroughly enjoyed her. I think she did a very good job. I really enjoyed her. She was proper. And then Tarantino actually, he actually wrote a lot of the characters for specific actors. So he wrote the character of Winston the Wolf specifically for Harvey Keitel. He wrote the role of Jules for Samuel L. Jackson. Someone else did audition for the role and almost got it, but then Samuel L. Jackson actually flew back and re-auditioned again just to make sure that he got that role. But a lot of the characters were actually written for specific people. Yeah. And then also Tarantino, so he obviously played, I love Tarantino's character, but he originally was going to play the drug dealer.
Yeah.
But then he said he wanted to be behind the camera for the whole overdose scene where John Travolta stabs Uma Thurman and et cetera, et cetera. So he then switched it and was the guy with the coffee that's wife was going to come back home.
How crazy was it the way that they filmed that scene? So they actually filmed it backwards.
Oh, serious?
Yeah, so they recorded him doing this. And then they...
They
played it back
for real. He couldn't stab her for real. Yeah. With like a...
And it's not like you could... Because, I mean, if you actually watch it, they actually cut away. You only see him doing this. But at least you get... I mean, can you imagine full needle, everything at an actor? There's injuries that could...
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's her heart. Because he had to pierce her heart, wasn't it?
Yeah. Through the breastbone. I mean, that's...
That's why he had to use force, was because...
Can't you feel like at least where there's between the rib, you know? Like maybe
problem is, isn't your heart deeper?
Try and feel the part and try and move the bone in the right place. You know, okay, they're right there between the meat. You know, the meat, but if you guys have had ribs, you know, the meat part.
But it's not like your heart's on the edge. That's why he had to get through stuff.
Through bone. Can you imagine? That's crazy.
The fact that she survived was a miracle.
Yeah.
She really...
Do you think she woke up from the adrenaline, or do you think she... That was just... Because it's like... You know? So I don't know if it's just...
I think it was the adrenaline.
Timing, or it was the adrenaline.
I think it was the adrenaline. Because why else would she have woken up?
But it, like, that quick...
Because pain wouldn't inflict...
That quick...
Yeah, in your heart, Ryan. Pump adrenaline in your heart. Let's see what happens to you.
I'm sure a lot of people would like painkiller like that. You know? Hey. Like a panada. Okay.
No, I think people would die. I think if you're not having an overdose, don't do it. Because I think you will kill yourself.
Yeah.
Like the only reason...
What are you doing? Just taking a painkiller.
Well, you won't have pain because you'll be dead.
Anyway, please, guys, keep your medical book. You know the one you were supposed to get?
Yes, and then they didn't give
them
the medical book.
But then they were just like, all right, fine, let's
And they're all like panicking and freaking. Yeah, everybody, the way the John Travolta crashes the car.
Even the way he handles it, like on the lawn, he's like, yes. Hey, you came in the drugs, do you? And he like just drops it.
No, now help me.
And then like,
yeah, shame. Bruce Willis worked on the film for only 18 days. And I mean, he was like the whole second act.
Mm.
And it was a 2 hour and 45 minute film. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Was this before or after Die Hard? I'm sure it was after.
I actually don't know. From the sounds of it,
his name was already...
Yeah. Apparently, he had been in a lot of films. A lot of them had flopped, but he did have a name for himself. So I don't know if it was...
Bruce Willis.
He was very young, yeah, though.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was 1994. Mm. It was... Mm. Yeah. And then Jules flipping... So Samuel L. Jackson flipping the table over in the beginning was improvised. And Frank Wally's reaction, who was the guy that they were speaking to, his reaction was genuine to him flipping the table over. But they continued the scene, and that particular shot was actually put in... Oh, sorry, it was done in one take. Mm. That's also what Quentin does. He's one, like, they'll literally be walking up to an elevator at...
But that's what they did. It was that whole follow-up. Yeah, it was like them walking up and they're finding the room, then they walk that side.
Yes, they wait, like, is it time yet? No, we're early. Oh, okay, we'll just go stand over there. That's never so calm.
Because there's an estimated time of arrival. They're like, no, we need to give them time to settle down, settle back, you know? Yeah.
Also, this was one of the first movies to use the internet for advertising. I feel like Quentin Tarantino has a gift when it comes to advertising for his film, because he always did something that like other people do after that. So like with Reservoir Dogs, it was the character, individual character posters. Now this one was internet advertising. Like, it's insane. Mm. But do you know that Quentin Tarantino actually has created a subgenre within the crime, the you know, the crime genre?
Yeah.
He's created a sub-genre where people now try and make films that are like his Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fictions, that they're both crime drama films. He's literally created... He's so successful as a film director, he created a sub-genre...
I think this is more like crime rom... No, crime com.
Crime com. It is a crime com.
Comedy crime.
But at the same time, it's still a drama if you think about it. Yeah, shame. But it was actually, yeah. And then also, this was, I think, my favorite scene. My favorite scene in the first act, my favorite scene was the dance. That whole sequence was so weird but so cool. Mm. But she was, Uma Thurman was apparently reportedly nervous during that dancing scene with John Travolta. Because he was already famous for dancing, because he'd done I think it was
Grease.
Saturday Night Fever.
Oh yes, and
Grease.
Saturday Night Fever.
So like John Travolta was famous for dancing, and apparently he told her to shut up and twist when she mentioned it to him.
Is it?
Yeah, but also their facial expressions, like they were so serious. Like it didn't even look like they were having fun, but they were like.
This is the thing, huh?
Twisting was a cool dance, though. Yeah. Like we don't see that anymore, because it's not like... But it was a cool...
Well, unless you go to, like, your uncle or aunt's, you know,
and
if the right music comes up as well.
And then, yeah. I didn't pick this up, but apparently in the opening sequence with Honey Bunny and Pumpkin, Jules can be heard talking about quitting the life, so Samuel L. Jackson, and Vincent can be seen entering the bathroom. Yes. I didn't pick it up, but we weren't looking for it.
That's probably
why. Suppose if you watched it a second time, you'd be like, oh my goodness, there they are. I see them.
Well, like you said with the motorbike.
Yes.
You hear the motorbike.
Mm. And then also something bad happened every time Vince goes to the bathroom. So the first time he goes to the bathroom, Mia overdoses. The second time he goes to the bathroom is when Pumpkin and Honey Bunny are robbing the restaurant. And the third time, Butch shoots him when he comes out. Yeah. So that, yeah, shame. His character just...
Hold it in, rather.
Yeah. And then also the song playing during the dance scene, apparently Quentin Tarantino's mom would listen to that song repeatedly when she was pregnant with him. Cool, right? So that was, yeah.
Psychologically imported or installed.
Yes, it was. And then this I was actually interested by. So, you know, Samuel L. Jackson quotes Ezekiel 25, verse 17.
Yeah.
And then he says, the path of the righteous man is beset on... that, and then, I will strike down thee upon with great vengeance. Like he does. Now, that actually is not Ezekiel 25, 17. Right. So, Ezekiel 25, 17 says, and I will execute great vengeance upon them with furious rebukes, and they shall know that I am the Lord when I shall lay my vengeance upon them. Apparently, though, that was... So, they did take some of it, but then also Quentin Tarantino actually added to the verse, so it's he's not actually correctly quoting Ezekiel 25:17 when he.
So
he
probably just wanted a bit more lengthier,
yeah,
so that he can. You know.
And obviously, he uses it as a right to kill, but then by the end of the movie, you see him actually now use it as a reason not to kill. Yeah.
So he's trying to be the shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm trying really hard to be the shepherd.
The weird part is, if you look at the storyline as a whole, it was not satisfying. It was not a satisfying story. It's actually quite a disturbing story.
If someone were to tell you what the film was about, I think this is where the whole experience versus, you know, this movie is also an experience. You got to, because I mean, like the conversations there and the stuff that they talk about, you're just like, why are you guys talking
McDonald's
about this right now?
Do you know what they call a Mac? A Big Mac in France?
Yeah. What a
Or is it something Royale?
Yeah, a Royale with
cheese.
Cheese
Royale.
Yeah.
Like literally, they're talking about
like,
that.
And he's even in the background. He's like, right? He's like, mm-hmm. And he's like rolling in. Like it's just like it's so. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good.
It was good. For me, honestly, when I was watching it and it got to the... I loved... The Butch storyline was not my favorite. Mm. I loved the John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson, Uma Thurman. Those scenes I loved. I loved those scenes. I really, really enjoyed those scenes. For me, the second act, I get why he put it in, and I suppose it did like add to the storyline. But like, I'm really glad that he didn't end the movie with Butch riding away. I'm really glad that he went back in time and... Because even though John Travolta dies, you kind of don't feel the death as much because he comes back again, if you understand what I'm saying.
I guess it's kind of like, what happened to John Travolta? Now you got shot in the future by a guy.
Yeah.
What guy? And now you
you're
have
like,
to,
oh,
no, this
Butch
was the boxer guy. What happened? His girlfriend, no. And this is what happened, and this is where he is, and this is how he reacts. And shame, poor guy, you know, he's just trying to live a life. And then...
Also, remember John Travolta's character is the brother of the maniac psychopath that was in Reservoir Dogs.
That's it.
They're brothers.
They are connected.
He's a way better. I like John Travolta. Mm. He was the better brother, you know. Mm. He really was.
So,
So that was Pulp Fiction. I honestly didn't expect what I watched was not what I expected.
Did you ever Google the meaning behind the name?
I saw in the beginning they gave that definition.
Yeah. The first one obviously wasn't valid. It was just like, what? Pulp.
Isn't it fruit or... Isn't pulp...
Yeah.
You know, you could just...
And then the second one, which I was like, wait, what? I don't know if it was late or... But for me, it was... Wow. There's a rock band called Pulp, by the way.
Pulp.
Did you know that?
So Pulp Fiction refers to a genre of racy action-based stories published in cheaply printed magazines from around the 1900s to the 1950s, mostly in the United States. Pulp Fiction gets its name from the paper it was written on.
Mm. Cinnamons. Trashy. Cheap. Sensational. Yeah. Lurid. Tasteless.
So I suppose that actually makes sense because it was four different short stories combined. And if they're saying it was short stories printed cheaply, so I suppose it does make sense. There's not what the name gives off, but makes sense. Yeah.
So you heard it all, folks.
Right here. Yeah. With great vengeance and furious anger. No, I'm joking. And now we will not shoot you. We will sign out and be like
what?
Samuel L. Jackson and go and be the shepherd, you know.
Say what? Say what again? I dare you. Say what
and
again?
And then he said, did he say what again? He did. Yeah. He did
like,
say what again.
Does he look like a... What? And then he does the and then
the I like that that he shot the guy on the couch. I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
No. The best for me was, can I have a sip of your beverage
to
wash down the
then Doug shrinks it all the way.
The reaction to even the burger is like,
No, Samuel L. Jackson's character was a vibe. He was a whole vibe in this film.
He takes the seriousness out of the situation.
You didn't mind. That's the thing with Samuel L. Jackson and with John Travolta. When they kill people, you don't not like them. That's even why they made the guy get shot as an accident.
Was it Reggie?
Marvin.
Hey, Marvin, did you...
But you know, apparently he was supposed to be shot in the neck and then die slowly. And then they were going to shoot him. Yeah. But then the guy that acted as Marvin actually said to Quentin that if you do that, the audience isn't going to like the two of them.
Yeah.
So rather make it a mistake. That was the last thing I was expecting. Was for him to turn around and shoot him.
They're like, hey, come on. And then he had to run around. I'm like, okay, let him live. Okay, cool. Okay, awesome. Oh, that's nice. Okay.
I was glad he died because it led to the scene at Quentin Tarantino's house, and that scene was amazing.
That's true.
Never. This movie is weird. It makes you feel things as a viewer that you don't normally feel.
Yeah. So remember three or four films ago, I spoke about how that I get a feeling of the film. Like I feel this film, I went to bed. I literally wanted to go and take another bath. I just felt so dirty. And
for me, the second act made me feel like that. The first and third act was better.
But I think it was just because of all the language and then the drugs and then the business and all of that. But I don't know. But even the way, and most probably you'll probably look at even the way that they did the color grading and probably shot on film as well. So it's got that realistic grainy type of, but yeah. Just the better the language, man. Can someone make up that program? Because
it would really help.
Yeah.
Really, really help.
Take a soap with you.
Call it soap.
Then you're looking more like Fight Club.
True.
But anyway.
Yeah. This has been the movie show.
On Active FM.
Until next week.
Cheerio.
Radio has never been better, baby. This is Active FM. Go to www.activefm.co.za for more.